This is On The Air with Paul Obey here on BBC Radio Kent. And tonight we are talking about all things related to social care. As I mentioned, I've got two great guests in the studio. I did a back of the envelope calculation before we came on air, and I reckon that we have about 38 years of professional experience in social care in the studio tonight. So why would you not take advantage of that expertise and call me on 0800 756 1111, text me on 81333, starting with the word Kent, or contact me on social media at BBC Radio Kent with any issues or experiences you have relating to your journey with the social care sector. I think that given that experience, it'd almost be bordering on gross negligence if I didn't introduce my guests immediately. So firstly, we have Tony Stein, Chief Executive of Healthcare Management Solutions, and I may well refer to them as HCMS through the show. But HCMS are a care home operator. They operate 80 care homes across Great Britain, including two in Kent. And also Michael Hodges, who is head of healthcare consultancy at Knight & Co. and has a lot of experience, at Christie & Co. and has a lot of experience of dealing with strategic issues in the healthcare sector. So welcome to both of you here tonight on the Air with Paul Obey here on BBC Radio Kent. And thank you for sparing the time. Michael, I'd like to start with you, and just kind of like a big strategic issue which has got a lot of attention recently, and it's about supply and demand. In the social care sector, the number of beds we have at the moment, and when you think about the ageing population, there was a report that came out in The Lancet in 2017, and they did some kind of statistical analysis of the growth in population, or the ageing population. And they came up with the idea that we need an extra 70,000 beds by 2025 to serve the demands of an ageing population in the social care sector. How do you see that being met, if at all, given the kind of development of social care beds in the UK as it stands at the moment?
Well, firstly, good evening. It's great to be here to talk about this really important topic. The question you've asked is the question that we're all asking ourselves on a daily basis. I mean, the numbers, the Lancet numbers are huge. Putting it into context, over the last 3 years across the country, we've actually lost over 1,000 beds.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. And in the south of England, we've only had 40 new homes registered. So therein lies the challenge.
So what is causing, when you say there's a loss of 1,000 beds, I mean, that's pretty significant. What is causing that?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the beds that have been lost are actually smaller services, many serving the local authority market, and it's down to economics. And I'm sure Tony will come in very quickly and explain how challenging it is to run a smaller care home.
So, I mean, just given that kind of trend, you're very concerned with buying and selling of care homes, development. I mean, is it a question that... One, I guess it's land prices, but there's alternative uses for this land. There may be residential, there may be office. Is it that care homes are kind of losing out to those kind of alternatives, given the kind of economics, as you say, especially in the local authority sector?
Well, I think it depends where you are. Certainly in Kent and the southeast, absolutely the housing market's booming. There are a lot of opportunities for owners of smaller homes and that perhaps aren't making huge amounts of money to sell up for redevelopment. So there's definitely that exit route now. It may not be here in a few years' time if we have another recession, if I mention the dreaded recession word. But, you know, it's a competitive market. That's the bottom line. So actually finding land, building takes time. Getting the planning consent takes time. There are many hurdles to cross before you can actually get a new care home off the ground. And frankly, it's expensive. It's about 10, well, for a 60-bed care home, you're talking a spend of £10 million before you start operating.
Really? In the southeast?
Well, across the country.
Right.
Build costs are going up. There's a scarcity of labour. The tradesmen are hard to come by. So it's not a cheap game by any stretch.
So I guess what you're really saying is that this kind of obviously it's built in some kind of error. Mm. But if that's if we accept that 70,000 extra beds as being roughly what is needed, and you think that sort of sounds about right, given the aging population, if you like, more medical demands and the fact that it's less likely to be independent living the longer one lives, it seems to me that at the moment, that's going to be an incredible challenge to meet that kind of target.
I completely agree. And the reality is, as I say, the process, the time it takes to actually build one of these things, even if you found the site, it can take you 2 or 3 years just to get through planning, to go through all the hurdles. We need to start those JCBs up now. It's a real challenge for us.
It's quite a stark warning. I mean, Tony, what do you think about this? I mean, you obviously operate, I mean, as I said, 80 care homes around Great Britain. Mm. And I guess one of the questions is, even if we went some way to meeting that target of the 70,000 beds, are they the right type of beds? And Michael, I think what you're sort of really referring to is that, to a certain extent, if these care homes cost that much to develop, then it may be more likely that they're going to be funded by the private market as opposed to the local authority market. So we may well deliver the number of beds, but are they going to be the right beds?
Absolutely. I mean, last year was the first year we saw a net increase in the number of beds. There were some 8,000 new beds built and are commissioned, and there were 6,000 lost. That hides a sad reality that the 8,000 built were built for the private market, and the 6,000 lost were those that were feeding and supplying the local authority market. And so we have a polarizing situation at the moment where there is a lot of interest. There's a lot of investment money chasing the funding of developments for the private sector, but nobody is wanting to build a home that will provide to the local authority market because there is no money in it. It's really tough.
Okay. I mean, that seems to be a big concern. Now, what do you think about this? Would you be concerned about this kind of strategic issue that's been highlighted? I mean, I guess I come from a kind of personal selfish point of view. At some point in the future, I'm going to need to access social care. And you sort of worry about the ability to provide that social care to people in my kind of age group and slightly older. And that is going to be a significant challenge. I think there was another study which said out to 2035, there needs to be 190,000 extra homes, extra beds. And it just seems that the market is not really set up at the moment to be able to deliver on that.
Absolutely not. I mean, the funding is one challenge, but there are so many other challenges as well. And, you know, I think we as a society, we're expecting an awful lot from operators, and rightly so. The problem is that there's a mismatch between the funding and the demands, you know. So a good example for that would be loneliness is one of the biggest challenges for the elderly, and a care home is a great place for people to go, there's socialisation and so on. Regulators, inspectors obviously are into the homes, and they're doing their job to assess whether or not we're providing a good quality service, and often they comment on the lack of time that staff have to spend talking to the residents. The reality is that no cost of care calculator that the local authorities have used has got any time in there for one-to-one socialisation. You know, it's just not something that's costed into the whole equation. And as Mike rightly pointed out, if you stay in a Holiday Inn, even the cheapest Holiday Inn at £100 a night, you know, it's £700 a week. But for that money, you're expected to provide a full suite of services, you know, 24/7 care, laundry, hairdressing, so on. You know, the services go on and on. So, you know, it's just not a fundable proposition at local authority rates. And Kent particularly, if you look at their residential care rates, for example, the baseline rate is £379 a week. Yeah. You know, it's very difficult to provide a service for that.
I mean, I'd like to ask the question and what your thoughts on that. Have you had problems getting into a care home? Did you find there were enough places? And call me on 0800 756 1111. Bearing in mind what we've just heard, because I think this is a really important issue. We're gonna be specifically addressing that issue after the weather and traffic at 20 past nine. Just moving on, Michael, any other kind of big themes out there in the care home sector? I mean, I know that the government are bringing out a green paper, which I think has been delayed, but that's sort of in the autumn. A green paper being a kind of discussion document and a kind of indication of the way the government are thinking and looking for comments prior to enacting legislation. But what are the other big themes you're seeing in the care sector?
Well, the Green Paper has been promised for a while now, and it's been kicked back a few times. We hope it will come. It's absolutely needed. And if it's dealt with properly, should try to address the funding conundrum that Tony's outlined. Look, there are many opportunities. There are also many challenges in the social care sector. And one of the things we must talk about, and I know we'll come on to it a bit more later, is the people factor. I mean, we have the reason I think both Tony and I are still in the sector and we still enjoy it is because of the people that we meet on a daily basis. There's a fantastic workforce, unsung heroes, doing a great job. And, you know, rightly so, you know, pay rates have gone up with living wage and a pressure to upskill these people. But that's the circular thing. It comes down to funding as well. So whatever you look at, whether it's development, whether it's the operational side of things, it's the funding circle that has to be squared. And that is why the Green Paper is so important for us.
It's a really interesting point. I mean, we spoke about the kind of physical requirement in terms of the number of beds, but also in line with that, it's all right having the beds, but it's having the kind of human resource. And as you say, it plays... It's an incredibly valuable sector and unbelievably worthwhile careers, but that shortage of labour could really present problems in achieving the kind of targets we've spoken about.
Well, we've had, it's widely reported, the nursing shortages both in the NHS and in social care, and it's been profound and it's growing, and certainly the EU referendum, the Brexit referendum, has forced care home operators to go further afield to recruit nurses now. And very positively, actually, the immigration rule change announced the other week has helped. But we still have an age-old issue, which comes back to, frankly, poor workforce planning going back over many years, where we do not have enough new nurses being trained up in the sector. And it's a fantastic career to work with people and to provide the care, the support and the compassion. And as I say, it's not just the nurses, it's the care assistants, it's the cooks, the cleaners and so forth. But we need to be able to, we need more money to invest in this crucial workforce.
I think all we've been referring to in this first section of the show is you know, this kind of planning and this, and you know, essentially, and not to downplay it, but this long-term forecasting about the kind of key trends within the social care sector. Look, we're going to talk further about these. This is On the Air with Paul O'Bey here on BBC Radio Kent, and tonight we are talking all things related to social care. We're going to talk about the funding model of care homes. And if you are beginning the journey and maybe you're thinking about joining a care home, or you're assisting a loved one in making that really important decision, where can we help you? What kind of questions do you have, or what experiences can you share about going on that journey? And also, just in terms of staffing within care homes, Michael spoke about that briefly before we went to the weather and the traffic, and just, you know, there's some really rewarding care careers within the care sector, but also there's a real question about the availability of staff. And what experiences do you have within care homes on that particular matter? And you can call me on this on 0800 756 1111. You can text me on 81333, starting with the word Kent, or you can reach out to us on social media at BBC Radio Kent. Tony, just turning to you on this funding model question, you hear a lot about, and there's this term cross-subsidisation to do with the funding of care homes. What does that mean?
Basically, what people tend to do is they look at care homes as a sort of single product. So, you know, mum's in a care home, but mum's funded by the local authority, and there's a lady next door in the next room, she's receiving just the same services and she's paying for her own care. There's a financial assessment that takes place when you're deemed to need care, and that's done by the local authority, social services. And if you have savings, or if you have equity in your house and what have you, anything over £23,250, as it turns out, then you will be responsible for paying your own care fees. And so it's considered somewhat unfair that you might be receiving exactly the same service as somebody in the next room, but they're funded by the local authority and you're having to pay it out of your savings. And that's, and this is where we talk about cross-subsidisation, because the person paying their own fees will probably be paying more than the person who's being funded by the local authority.
So that's, I guess that's why we typically see year on year there are more higher percentage increases in the private funded fees as opposed to the local authority fees. Going back to that point we made earlier about the kind of budgetary constraints that local authorities have.
Well, if you think about going back to the hotel analogy, if your costs are increasing as a hotel, you can up your rates.
Yeah.
If you're running a care home and you have, let's say, 50% of your clients are funded by the local authority and 50 are private, if your costs go up, the only fees you can put up are the ones for the private payers. And the other local authority funded clients, the fee increase is dictated to you by the local authority. And last year, for example, across the UK, the average fee increase from local authorities was around 2.5-2.6%. That isn't anywhere near enough to cover the increased costs. So we have to put the private pay fees up slightly more. I think it's also worth mentioning, though, that there is this issue about bulk purchasing. And I think to some extent, it's important to understand that if you were a local authority buying 30 beds in a care home and somebody else was only buying the one bed in a care home, as a local authority, you would expect to pay less because you're buying more.
But I guess one of the things is over time, with private funders paying more, that kind of discrepancy between the local authority weekly fee and the fee paid by someone paying privately, that gap is just going to get bigger, which also makes it kind of over time a pretty unsustainable gap. I mean, Michael, I don't know what you see from your experience on that.
Well, it is absolutely an unsustainable gap. And the CMA looked at the whole funding of social care last year in a lot of detail. And I think they acknowledged that ultimately what has to happen is the local authority funding has to catch up with the private, i.e. the private element doesn't come down. The private actually reflects the true cost of care when you factor in all the costs associated not only with running the care home, but also paying banks, servicing debt and reinvesting in the assets. And one of the real challenges the local authority homes have faced has been having enough money to actually invest back in the assets. And this is often one of the reasons why some homes sadly close, because the building just becomes non-fit for purpose through lack of investment over the years.
So, I mean, I guess, Tony, just your experience of running care homes, where you may have a mixed situation. You may have some local authority funded patients and you may have some privately funded. I mean, to a certain extent, I guess what you really look at is that the privately funded really make up the, if you like, the gap between what the local authorities pay and the running cost of the home, if you put it as starkly as that.
It is, and it's almost a form of taxation, I think, if you look at it that way.
So, but
it's a tax that's only paid by those who are in the care homes.
Right.
And so, you know, the reality, I think we can't escape the harsh reality of this. I mean, Mike earlier on told us what the demographics are saying, and the demographics are quite compelling. More and more people needing care. And at the moment, you know, we don't have the facilities and we don't have the homes to meet that demand. But basically, we're in a situation now that we need now to look to fund this in a different way. We need to look at some kind of taxation system where the monies that are generated are hypothecated, and that means just protected and ring fenced and used only for care. So we have to face that, and unfortunately, it's not politically very palatable to be putting taxes on.
What are you worried about the affordability of care? Have you had any experiences with relatives on this key issue? And again, we'd love to hear your views on this. You can call me on 0800 756 1111. You can text me on 81333, starting with the word Kent, or you can contact me on social media at BBC Radio Kent. It clearly is a key issue, and I guess that is an issue which, again, we refer to the government and their green paper. You'd like to think that kind of funding gap is going to be addressed in some way, or there's going to be some kind of proposals out there, because it's just going to become a bigger issue as we move forward.
Well, the issue you have is that local authority budgets in real terms have been cut now over a number of years. The local authorities are desperately trying to balance their books and cover all the services that they have to cover, which are not just social care or care homes. So you have to provide it is to some extent across the country a bit of a postcode lottery. Some local authorities have much higher fee rates than others, and some have awarded much higher fee rate increases than others. And certainly in Tony's business, covering care homes all over the place, he'll see a real difference between homes in different regions. So in some areas, if you're a national operator, it's more advantageous to focus on different regions than others.
Right. OK, let's just move on to the staffing issue. And again, coming back to you, Michael, your thoughts on staffing. I mean, we hear a lot about availability of staff, and you know, there's some comments about the, if you like, the lack of availability of nurses, for example. What are your thoughts about the kind of general trends in relation to staffing in the social care sector?
Well, let's be completely clear. Staff are the most important people in any care home.
Absolutely.
The most important asset. And You can have a care home which, from a specification perspective, is modest. If you have a great staff team there, you can deliver fantastic care for the people living in that care home. And that's something that all of us in the sector feel really passionately about. The challenge we've had, though, is, unfortunately, take the nursing side of things. Poor workforce planning over many years has led to there being not enough nurses to serve both the NHS and also to serve the social care sector. There's a need now to have a degree to become a nurse. You now have to pay your fees. The bursary scheme's been abolished. Doesn't make it easy when you have to accrue quite a level of debt before you can start work. And then sadly, the remuneration levels will mean it's several years before you can pay that money back. That being said, though, there are some green shoots, and I think it's what's really positive. Initiatives undertaken by a lot of operators over the last few years to look at ways of upskilling care assistants to take on new skills and new tasks to ease the pressure on the nurses. And we must also embrace and acknowledge the huge contribution made by overseas nurses coming into the UK.
Sure, yeah.
Who provide a fantastic service.
And there was a development last week on that, just on the kind of immigration rules by the government, I believe.
Absolutely. So essentially, what was a quota, restricting the number of overseas nurses, has been lifted. And that was absolutely vital, given the reduction we've seen in nurses coming from the EU, as I say, to fill this short-term gap. Doesn't solve the problem overnight. There are still a lot of hoops to be overcome in terms of English language testing exams and sourcing people and training and so forth. But it's certainly a useful step in the right direction.
That's really interesting. One thing we're going to be talking about after the weather and the traffic is what makes a good care home. And if you've begun this journey of selecting a care home, what has really worked for you in that analysis? In terms of selecting the care home or doing your research, what do you think has really been beneficial? Really want to hear from you on that journey. And even if you are in a care home or you have a loved one in a care home, what are the kind of the good things about that care home, or quite frankly, some of the things which you feel need improvement? Want to hear from you on those issues. And as you said, you can contact us on 0800 756 1111. You can text us on 81333, starting with the word Kent, or you can contact us on social media at BBC Radio Kent. Tony, just picking up on that staffing issue which Michael alluded to, just because you operate 80 care homes across the UK, I mean, you must be dealing with a lot of staffing developments. What do you see on the ground happening?
Yeah, as Mike said, I think, you know, we believe passionately that the staff, the workforce, the teams in the homes are the gold dust of the sector. You know, we passionately believe that, you know, it's not always the fabric of the building. In fact, the fabric of the building is almost to some extent irrelevant. It's the care that's delivered by those individuals in it. One of the big issues that we face is not so much finding sufficient staff to operate the home. It's actually that a lot of staff choose now to work as through agencies, through staffing agencies.
Right.
And that is exceptionally expensive for us. But it also poses, and it's not just the cost, it's to my mind, there are other issues that come out of that that make agency staff who do a good job generally, but a less desirable way of staffing care homes. So, for example, with a permanent member of staff, you know, that you can put a program of training together. They get used to the residents, they get used to the other staff and the procedures and so on. When an agency member of staff has to be used, they're less familiar with the whole setup, they're less familiar with the residents and so on. So ideally, you wouldn't use agency staff if you could avoid it.
But the agency staff, I mean, that gets a lot of coverage in the NHS as well. But to some extent, it must fulfil a purpose, because you are going to have shortfalls at certain points, be it vacation, etc. But what you're saying is that it's sort of mushroomed to such an extent that it's a big cost burden on the sector.
A huge cost burden. I think, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, the number for the NHS was something like £3 billion a year is spent on agency workers. You know, if they could eradicate that as a problem, it basically fixes the problem of funding the NHS. You know, that's how big an issue it is. From our perspective, I think eradicating agency is a desirable proposition for operational reasons. I don't believe that you can ever run a home as efficiently with agency staff as you can with permanent members of staff. So we look for different reasons to get rid of that. You're saying they're an essential part of the process, but in reality, we use bank staff, what we call bank staff, which are our own agency effectively, that people who just want to work odd hours now and again instead of agency. So it's doable in a different way.
Okay, that's a really interesting point. And we should pick up on that in a few minutes. This is On the Air with Paul Obey here on BBC Radio Kent. We're now going to be talking about the selection of a care home. Are you going through the process at the moment of considering which care home you may want to choose, either for yourself or for a loved one? And if you are going through that process, is there anything you can share about what you found really helpful in your research? Or do you have any questions relating to that? And we have some, as I said, we have some experts in the studio who can really help you frame your thinking on that. And also, we've spoken a lot about care homes closing. And I'm just wondering if there are any people out there who've got experience of that being notified to them, and what kind of questions or concerns does that raise for them? Just turning to you, Tony, you know, if I'm, let's pose a scenario here. I'm thinking about a care home for a loved one, and I want to start the research, and I've got a number of alternatives in my locale. What are the kind of things that I should be looking at to sort of narrow down my choices?
Okay, I think a lot of people ask me this very question, and it's not as complicated as people think in many ways, not in my view anyway. I think it's, to my mind, it's you've got to visit a care home to understand what that care home's about. And in the same way that you would walk into somebody's home and you would understand the relationships and how the family behaved, and that would indicate to you what the atmosphere was like. You can walk into a care home and you can tell almost instantly, I can certainly see almost instantly, from the interactions between the staff and the residents, from the way that they behave, from the language that they use, whether this is a good care home and whether the care being delivered is of a good standard. Important that you talk to the manager. It's important that you can see that the staff know the residents well. They would use whatever terms of address that they would choose, but generally you tend to find that it's a quite familiar
sure.
kind of environment.
Yeah.
And these are the sorts of things. Look for eye contact, and look for the language and the kind of dialogue that's going on in the home. You can very quickly tell.
And I mean, that's sort of physically visiting the care home. What about the kind of other available information out there? I mean, I'm thinking about the regulatory reports, which yeah. are, you know, similar to almost like choosing a school.
Okay.
CQC reports. I mean, if I was to read those, and I'm just not familiar with the terminology of care homes, what are the kind of things I should be looking out for?
Well, it's different in the different regulatory environments. So Scotland's different from Wales, it's different from England. But I'll talk about England, and the CQC is the regulatory body, the Care Quality Commission. And they produce reports which are viewable online. And those reports provide a grading. I think people like things to be kept simple. So those gradings grade a home from inadequate through requires improvement, good and outstanding. What I would say is that you need to look beyond the rating. So a home may be rated requires improvement, but I think you need to read that report and understand what it says about the things that they felt needed to be improved. Very often in my experience, homes are rated that are rated, say, requires improvement, have got outstanding levels of care, and the commentary that's coming back from the residents and the relatives is very, very positive, but maybe their paperwork isn't quite as up to date as it could be.
Okay.
So it
and
may
that,
be something
that
something
may generate like, requires improvement. But so you would ordinarily, I think, prior to your kind of comments, you may write off that home, but you're saying you've got to read behind that and understand what the fundamental issue is which is driving that.
Absolutely. And I think the language that we use is quite difficult as well for people, because often regulators or regulatory bodies talk about people being at risk. And, you know, I might say that I don't know when you last checked your smoke detectors in your own home, but it may be more than the recommended 6 months ago, but does that put you at risk, or are you putting your family at risk? So this language is quite emotive, But actually, if you read the report and understand what those issues are, you might make your own decision about that home. But I think you could also look at rating sites. You can talk to social workers. You can talk to GPs. Particularly interesting to talk to GPs because GPs are in and out of services and they see what's going on, and they can often provide you with a very personal view and a very subjective view.
Well, what about this? And I think there's a bit of a misconception out there, but if you are a local authority funded client, do you have any choice in the care home you may go into?
You have absolute choice, and that's a basic fundamental right. So, you know, the local authority will maybe suggest through the social worker a number of options if you're having those conversations about needing care. And, you know, you can choose, you can have a look at a number of homes. You talked about homes closing. One of the big concerns everybody has is, well, what's going to happen to mum? Or if you're in a home, you know, what's going to happen to me? The first thing that really should happen is that the social workers who come to talk to you or the people in the care home that's closing should be telling you, these are the local homes that you could consider. How about a trip out to have a look at them? And you've got the choice as to where you go.
That's really interesting. Michael, you obviously spend your professional life in the social care sector. Presumably you get asked questions about what are the kind of thought processes in determining the appropriate care home. What would be your response?
Well, I think following up from what Tony said, the great thing for everyone is you have a lot of information online. So very simply, if you need to find a care home in a certain location, you can use the CQC website or other websites to get a short list of homes to have a look at. And then the approach I always take is there's no substitution for going down there, visiting the home and doing it at random. Don't make an appointment, just turn up. And if you turn up and you go into a care home, you generally get, I would say, a very, very good appreciation of what it's actually like in practice. The manager may not be there. So if the manager's not there, how good's the deputy? Is there a deputy? Are you greeted with open arms? Do people spend some really, really good time with you? It's first impressions for me that always count. And if I go in and I find that the staff are disinterested, the first impression is poor, a bit like if I was going to a restaurant, for example, the chances are I'm probably not going to have my meal there.
Sure, so absolutely, yeah.
Go with first principles every time.
Yeah.
But get advice as well. And as Tony said, talking to doctors, if you have an elderly relative with a particular health need, you need to identify what care home is actually suitable for that person. So if they need nursing interventions, you don't want to be going and having a look at a basic residential care home that doesn't have nursing. So it's worth getting some advice on that side as well.
And Tony, what's your thoughts about, because I think a lot of times people may default, especially with a relative, to a care home which is very local. Mm-hmm. But it may, and that may be suitable, if you like, for the relatives, but that may not be the best solution for the person going into the care home. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as Mike said, a very important point is that home capable of delivering the specific care requirements
that's got to be the fundamental question.
That's the fundamental question.
Right.
And with the nursing shortage, interestingly, a lot of care homes have changed their registration, so they're now only providing residential care. So if they've got a nursing need, then you may find it more difficult to find a home for your loved one. But being local is, I always believe, very important. If you can find a local home that can provide the levels of care, it's always better because it's easier to go and visit. And I think it's very important that you're in and out of the care home if you're a relative, just to put your mind at rest that you've seen your loved one and that the care is being delivered properly.
I don't know if it resonates with both of you, but one of the things when I visited care homes, and it's been interesting, but there's been a number of situations where I may well have approached the care home and quite frankly, the facade on the outside doesn't look like what you'd expect. But when you, and I can think of specific examples where I've gone inside and just been blown away by the atmosphere, by the attitude of the manager of the home and the staff and the kind of unbelievable warmthness. And you get this amazing sense of the service being provided. And yet I could have easily have said, well, look, judging by the facade of the care home, this is just not for my relative. And so does that resonate with you that clearly, I mean, I think you're both making the point that irrespective of the, if you like, the outside appearance of the building, it's absolutely, and Michael, you made this point, it's absolutely about the people involved in delivering the care.
Completely. And you know, I would say, and I've had 17 years of it being in and out of care homes on a very, very regular basis, the vast, vast majority of people working in care homes do it because they passionately want to care for people. And so you do find that warmth, and often that the staff become more of a family in a way to the individuals in the home than sometimes the family, who may live quite some distance away, and they get very attached. And you know, we often find that our staff, particularly if someone passes away, you know, they're attending the funeral and they're taking time out of their own time, you know, to do that, because they become very attached. So I would absolutely say you've got to look past the facade and get inside and talk to the individuals involved.
I mean, I think another question that springs to mind, and it sort of goes back to what we spoke about at the top of the show, and it's the viability of care homes. In going through, if you like, this due diligence about the appropriate care home, what's your advice about, you know, to what extent it may be a great care home, but how do I understand, if you like, the financial viability of that care home? I mean, just throwing out an idea, but to the extent that it's predominantly, let's say, local authority funded, or let's say the occupancy levels of that care home were not what you would arguably expect, is that something I, as a potential for putting my loved one into, can understand? Because what I don't want is a situation where they are placed in that care home and 6 months, a year later, it basically transfers into a closed home. And I'm just wondering, what can I do about investigations of financial viability of that care home?
It's slightly more difficult unless you're used to searching the web and looking at sets of accounts and understanding what those accounts are saying. I think, rather bizarrely, you know, people often think that single operator care homes are the better option compared with large corporates, but actually large corporates are more able to support those odd homes in the portfolio that perhaps have a low occupancy, and so there's probably less chance of those having to close as a result of a period of low occupancy than there is somebody who only has the one home.
That's an interesting point.
That is a bit of a strange dichotomy.
Yeah, and I think from my side, you always have to ask the question: why is there a low occupancy in that care home? If it's a new build care home, that's obviously fairly understandable that the home's ramping up. If it's an existing home that's been around for a long time and it's abnormally low, there's probably an underlying reason. So again, it's sort of buyer beware, use your gut instinct, ask the questions.
Absolutely, some really interesting points. So are there any other, I guess the kind of open-ended question, are there any other points we've missed about that kind of due diligence? Any other kind of advice you can give about the idea of choosing that care home?
I think, as I said, walking around it is fundamental. I think looking at the reviews, looking at the dates that reviews were left, that's very important. Talking to the manager about the residents, the other residents in the home. Nobody should be worried in the care home if you want to stop and have a chat with one of the other residents. You know, that sort of thing is very important too. But again, external third parties that are in and out of the home all the time, very, very important. GPs and social workers and so on.
I think that's been some great advice. And look, I think what I just want to say is a huge thanks to both Tony Stein, Chief Executive of Healthcare Management Solutions, an operator of 80 care homes around Great Britain, and also to Michael Hodges, Head of Healthcare Consultancy at Christie & Co. I think, you know, when I first floated the idea of a show on social care, not only were you willing to participate, but you wanted to participate, because I think, you know, not to put words into your mouth, but you really felt that these issues need a wider airing, and I really appreciate the perspective you've brought to this, and I think that social care is one of those issues which sort of bubbles away arguably behind the NHS, and I think from that point of view the perspective you've added has been invaluable. So thank you very much for that.